The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Podcast with James Richardson, coming up.
Putting the arse into podcast and the F into proper research, because on this show there's no F in proper research. It's Football Weekly. Today's show's straining at the seams with top content. In the Premier League, Arsene Wenger looking more put out than the Olympic torch, etc. and so on, as United take the title race to two. While at the bottom, we'd given them as much chance of staying up as a tart Snickers when the fleet's in port, but Fulham and Bolton may be sticking around the Premier League a while longer. Abroad, Sid Lowe takes a break from his breezy Mediterranean lifestyle to tell us the latest from Spain. We've got news from Italy too, after a monster weekend in Serie A. Plus, we remember to mention Europe's other tournament, the UEFA Cup. And we discuss your posts in today's Football Weekly.
This is Guardian Football Weekly with James Richardson.
And hello, everybody. Well, podside today, we got Kevin McKerra.
Hello, James.
Hi there, Kevin. Where were you this weekend?
I was hanging about Old Trafford.
I'd have thought as much. And look forward to hearing your thoughts about that shortly. Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Where were you this weekend, Barry?
I was anchored to my desk here in the office yesterday,
right,
doing the minute-by-minute report on the events at Old Trafford.
Crikey. And Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. You brought a soapbox, I see. It's marked video replay.
Well, I did spend my day off on Friday discussing, really interesting actually, with various bloggers about video replay.
It was really interesting, wasn't it?
It was for me, but perhaps less so for you, James. I'm gathering by your time.
No, not at all.
I thought Sean was gone into sort of blog meltdown, actually. Well, if I didn't know better, I just suspected he was drunk.
If you're one of the very, very few readers who didn't bother to read every single word of this discussion, you'll be delighted to know that Sean is possibly going to be giving us a bit of a highlights tour later on. Is that right, Sean?
We might come to it.
We might.
Discuss issues.
Well, I look forward to that. I particularly enjoyed your comment over breakfast this morning. People who don't want change are either Luddites or haven't thought enough about it. That's the Ingle position. That's what you said about replays.
You, though, Jimbo, were saying how much you agreed with Sepp Plateau.
I do.
He's a complete Luddite. And
no, Sepp, I was talking about the skimpy costumes for women footballers, if you remember, but also on replays.
But I wondered whether you were... Because he was once the president of the World Society of Friends of Suspender Wearers, wasn't he? An organisation formed to protest that, and I quote, women replacing suspender belts with pantyhose. And I wondered whether you were a fan of that.
I love
as well.
It when he says those words. Well, you mentioned replays and that, Sean. I suppose that does tie in, topically enough, with the big game Man United-Arsenal. Although I don't really want to lead off our reaction to this game with the fact that Adebayor's goal was plainly handled and other things besides. Let's just start off by saying Man United, well, they stepped up a gear when they needed to, didn't they, Kevin?
Well, in a way, yes. But I think they also got kind of lucky. I thought Arsenal played them off the pitch for most of the game, were far more concerted. Adebayor had to score off his arm because his feet weren't working very well yesterday, as you may have noticed. So that's why it's a loud out of sympathy. It's such a cliche, Arsenal, isn't it? Why on earth does it come to a penalty? I don't really see it all that well, but it seems as if Gallas kind of listed towards his left. Was he hoping to get his chest in the way of it? Or?
It's incredibly lackadaisical defending. And it was the same, you know, the other night, and it was, you know, the same against Chelsea.
They're new Fulham, aren't they? They take the lead, then they concede a penalty at the other end.
But I don't want to be all that sarcastic. I thought you'd say for a team that must have been exhausted and depleted spiritually and all the rest of it after Anfield, it was a fantastic effort. So they were pounding away at Manchester United in the last few minutes, and Bentner really could have done better with one of the chances anyway. They were going down with all guns firing, and I think that maybe liberated them in the sense that really there was nothing left to worry about, just get stuck in. But I thought United maybe were more worried about not losing and getting the points were a bit inhibited by comparison. Cristiano Ronaldo rested on Wednesday against Roma, did very little apart from two perfectly executed penalties, so I thought that was nerveless.
And a lovely little touchline jig at the end, which I think we all warmed to, didn't we?
Which Justin Hoyt didn't warm to at all. He flattened him in the corner. Right. Wait, and Ronaldo just turned around and laughed at him, which was quite funny.
But he didn't do much when the battle was raging yesterday, Ronaldo. Unusually, he was played out of the game.
Interesting. I mean, it's a fair point. Arsenal did put on a very spirited performance. I thought Man U in the first half were maybe playing for the draw. They just didn't need to bother that much.
It was odd. I mean, it's almost as if they couldn't quite decide. Arsenal seemed to have a clearer view of the game. I think, as you say, Man United were kind of awaiting developments.
Right. It is also fair to say that Arsenal, as you mentioned, at Old Trafford, they played very well. Stamford Bridge, no other team has played so well. It's so many tough grounds and come away with so little, really.
No, I mean, and I know Arsenal fans get fed up with this, but there is this kind of self-destructive element to Arsenal. There are goals they lose that don't have to be lost. Gallas a very high quality international centre back does that yesterday.
Well, Arsene Wenger came out after the game and said that we play attractive football and we believe that's the way to win trophies, but they haven't won a trophy in 3 years, so maybe it isn't the way to win trophies.
He also said some other
Chelsea
things.
Don't play attractive football and they do win trophies. So
I mean, the thing is, they can play attractive football without the centre half giving away stupid penalties, can't they? The two things are not contradictory.
I think Arsenal need to get a bit of the mongrel about them, as they say in Australia.
Well, you're not the only one who thinks that they might need to buy in a bit of grit over the summer. Interestingly, the reports in Italy are that one or two players may be on their way out from the Emirates, including Kleb, who people are talking about on his way to Inter for a figure around about £10 million.
That's interesting, because I think Arsenal don't have any out-and-out wingers. Kleb likes to cut inside. Rosicki also likes to cut inside. Ebue, you know, has pace, but not much, not much else.
Well, they got Walcott, of course.
Maybe they will, but I don't know whether Wenger sees Walcott as perhaps, not, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time, playing more as a centre forward or off the front man, Kevin. He's talked various.
Yeah, I was thinking about Kleb, by the way, because I thought he played well yesterday. But then you think, how many assists does he actually have? How often does he actually play the final pass for a goal? I suspect not very often, for all his neatness and touch on the ball.
But we shouldn't be too hard on Arsenal, because I mean, in terms of goal difference, they have exactly the same goal difference as Chelsea. It's just in those very big games, and crucially, I think since they lost Old Trafford in the FA Cup, which I thought, as I said before, I thought was a terrible mistake. They went there half-hearted, they've won 2 out of 12, and until they had a series of 4 draws in a row, and they had lots of injuries around that point, and you know, with a bit more luck and a little bit more sort of. Darity in defence, they may well have won the trophy this year.
Is the problem that they kind of flatter to deceive and have flattered to deceive this season and in that game, and that they seem to promise so much and seem to merit so much and come away with so little? Why we're all so obsessed with discussing why.
I'd love to see their chances to goals ratio, because I suspect it'd be worse than almost any other team in the league.
What about this conspiracy that Wenger was hinting at post-game, in which he was saying that he'd never seen any team treated so badly in all his 11 years in England? This team has been punished in the last 7 weeks, he said, more than any other team I've seen in England since I wrote here.
It's a fantastic global conspiracy too, isn't it?
Well, he said, that we get the message. What message do you think?
I don't know. Wenger, I think, is a wonderfully intelligent bloke, and his teams play wonderful football. And also, the press love him, because, you know, if you go to a Wenger press conference on the Friday, he'll come around and say hello, boys, and be very friendly with them. But whenever he loses, I think he's getting worse than Fergie, isn't he? He doesn't have the volcanic funk that Sir Alex has, but he tosses out these allegations and insinuations every single time now.
Do you reckon Sean's a kind of smersh international organisation plotting his downfall, with referees from Sweden and Italy attending meetings in
they're all sitting there stroking white cats
in an extinct volcano, special sweeps for the referees meet to discuss it? I don't understand why referees would have it in for them, or any sense.
And indeed, yesterday they didn't. Adebayor's goal, as we pointed out, was actually rather involved his hand rather than his feet.
One thing I did notice over the weekend, I think it was in Saturday's Guardian, at his press conference for Friday, Fergie was very magnanimous towards Wenger. And again, after the game yesterday, you know, he was called, you know, be fair, let's be fair to Arsene. And that must be killing him altogether. You know, when your luck is so low that Fergie, your nemesis, is being nice to you, it must absolutely kill him.
It's so vindictive being courteous, isn't it?
Well, moving along anyway, Wenger admitting that they are now out of the title picture. Loads of people posting in on the whole Wenger and Arsenal debate. I mean, briefly, Rafferty with much the same line as us. Arsenal are a reflection of their manager. Great while the going is good, but lose it when something goes against them. Malicia reminding us all about the horrible injury to Eduardo, which in technical terms, in terms of their playing stuff, obviously had an impact, but I think it's fair to say must have had a huge psychological impact for what is still a young team. But whatever, they're now out of the title picture. Liverpool look set for fourth after their after Everton's draw and their victory. But all sorts of goings on off the field. Can you briefly summarise this for us, Kevin?
Tom Hicks and George Gillette feuding, but Tom Hicks now saying that Gillette and the chief executive, Parry...
Sneaked, basically.
Yes, they were also involved in perhaps bringing in Jurgen Klinsmann and arranging meetings. So mud being thrown. Some people say these things shouldn't be brought into light, but I think as a fan, I'd quite like to know who did what to whom.
Well, as a neutral, it's fantastic. Yes, it's very interesting. Yeah. Rafa, meanwhile, is... is doing one of his kind of bellicose red-faced, I demand to know details, etc. And I always feel when he's doing this that he might not be averse to somebody giving him a large cheque and sending him towards Real Madrid or something.
No, and knowing the details will not make him happy. It'll just make him even more discontented. But yeah, Real, as ever, will be in the market for a manager. But the sad thing is you only get a job for 1 year, don't you?
But surely he's entitled to know the details. I mean, if you found out about us, the manner in which we're plotting and scheming behind your back to get Tim Lovejoy or Rob Curling in here in your stead, you'd surely be upset as well.
Yeah. Right, OK. Chelsea Wigan tonight, blah, 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 and then Everton hosting Chelsea on Thursday. Two wins would put the Blues on level points. What kind of headgear is Petacek going to field for this?
Sounds that he's soon going to... It's only a matter of time before he comes out with his head just completely encased in plaster,
right.
You know, with a little eye holes and a straw for him to breathe through.
Don't you see him as the man with the iron mask? So, I think
So he's going to have some manner of mouth guard and, right. and his usual rugby skull cap.
Right.
So, yeah, make for comical viewing, if nothing else.
Indeed so. Now, meanwhile, at the bottom, if we can squeeze this into part one, there's all sorts of very exciting things happening because Birmingham's draw and those victories of a Bolton and Fulham mean that all of a sudden that whole relegation race is wide open again because Bolton are just 2 points behind Birmingham with, what, four to play. Fulham are 4 points behind Birmingham with four to play still. And Reading are back in the picture as well because they are now only 3 points off the drop themselves. I've got a large page here with all the... I can't go through all these fixtures.
Don't Fulham have a tough time, though? But
well, you have a look. There's the piece of paper.
Liverpool away, three games away. Liverpool and Man City and Portsmouth have a home game with Birmingham, which is obviously going to be
but
quite
the way
telling.
They played the Cottagers on when was it, Saturday against Reading. I mean, Reading perhaps were going into another of those little slumps for second straight defeat, and Coppell very unhappy about it. But Fulham were playing fantastically.
But they're—I mean, not only are they 4 points behind Birmingham,
they hit the post three, 4 times. I think in that
game, but they've got the goal difference is a lot worse as well. I think. Yeah. I mean, they'd have to beat Liverpool at home. They'd probably have to beat Birmingham at home, then get one at least one win from Man City or Portsmouth away, which is tough.
Even Wigan, Chelsea, and Aston Villa away, and then Man U at home in the last day of the season.
Well, Bolton have this thing of three of the last four are away, including Stamford Bridge on the final day. Derby already down. Posting in was Jerry Von Kramer. No, sorry, Templeton the Rat saying, I know that this will be way down on the pod crew's discussion list for Monday's pod, but was their loss to Derby's loss to Villa this Saturday Derby County's most abject performance of the season?
I don't know. They've had so many abject performances.
It was awful. Really, really, really bad. 6-0, and I think the rest of the Premier League is going to miss them a lot come summer.
One thing about Bolton, who battered West Ham on literally and metaphorically on Saturday, Kevin Davis picked up a yellow card, which brings him to 10 for the season, so he's now going to miss two games. He will be a massive loss.
And where are they next?
They are next at
away at Borough,
away at Spurs.
Doesn't look good. With Derby, you really know you're in trouble. With Stylian Petrov, it's been disappointing. Suddenly turns into Pele, and
cracking goal, no?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a very bad time at Aston Villa, but obviously he felt a whole lot better playing against Derby.
I wonder why.
Reminded him of being back in Scotland.
That's possible, yeah.
Speaking of Scotland, I think it's worth giving a quick nod to Queen of the South, who are 500-1 outsiders for the Scottish FA Cup, and yet they beat Aberdeen 4-3 on Saturday.
Brilliant, absolutely stunning game.
It was brilliant. Some terrible goals were up there.
It was, but they'd failed to win seven of the previous eight league matches. They'd gone out of the League Cup to East Fife through in the Scottish Third Division, and yet they were absolutely superb.
When is the final?
It will be in the middle of May.
Right. Can you imagine Aberdeen beating Celtic 1-0 at Celtic Park, then conceding four goals to Queen of the South? It's a funny old game, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is.
By the way, speaking of Scotland, Rangers, fantastic result last week, winning away to Sporting Lisbon.
We're going to have a bit of a chat about the UEFA Cup. Presently, with the help of...
We had a letter into the Fiverr last week, someone pointing out that the Rangers fans were singing at Sporting Lisbon, are you Celtic in disguise? And this correspondent was making the point that if they were, surely they'd have come up with a better disguise than green and white hoops.
That's clever.
Fair enough. Right, OK, well, very shortly, we're going to be dialing up Sid Lowe in Spain and hoping to talk to him about all sorts of exciting events in the Liga and also the aftermath of that shock defeat for Getafe against Bayern Munich in the UEFA Cup. And maybe a bit of a word about all the crazy transfer talk there is. Cristiano Ronaldo, Real Madrid, stay tuned.
The Guardian Football Weekly Podcast.
Right, next up, it's Sid Lowe on the line from Spain. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Sid, I'm well. We lost you last week in the middle of a tunnel somewhere.
Yeah, you did. There's quite a lot of tunnels in that part of Spain. It was quite frustrating. I kept going into one and then coming out and then going into another one and so on.
But you're back home now, are you?
I am in Madrid at the moment, yes.
Super duper. And Madrid, 9 points clear at the top after this weekend's games with 18 points left to play for. That's what, six games? Yeah, six games. So all over, is it, the title race?
Yeah, it's the title race is all over. Real Madrid are champions despite their very best efforts not to be. They've been aided along the way by Villarreal, who panic every time there's a decent objective in sight, and by Barcelona, who possibly, now I'd have to check the stats on this, but I wouldn't be surprised if Barcelona are the worst side in Spain over the last seven games, considering they've only won once and they've blown it every single weekend. They are just embarrassing to watch, and to be honest, Real Madrid are not a great deal better.
Well, listen, let's talk about the transfer market then, because lots of burning issues here. One Sunday paper in England came up with the story that Real Madrid are going to come in for Cristiano Ronaldo over the summer. I know that Real Madrid are serial offenders in terms of making noises about big-name players and how they're just about to step off the plane and they never quite materialise. But is there any semblance of truth in this one?
I hope it wasn't your sister paper, The Observer, because I don't think there's any truth in this whatsoever. I mean, there is truth in so much as Real Madrid are desperate to get Cristiano Ronaldo, just as they've been desperate to get Cesc and just as they've been desperate to get Kaká. And I don't think they will. Not least because I don't think Cristiano Ronaldo is in any hurry to get away from Manchester United. Not least because I think if he was to leave, then Real Madrid might not necessarily be the place that he would want to go to, although that of course, we can't be sure about. And I just don't see Real Madrid having the wherewithal to pull this deal off. I think Cristiano Ronaldo, for what it's worth, at some stage will leave Manchester United, but I just don't see him doing it now.
Mm. What about Rafa Benitez? Is there home for him in Madrid?
What, at Real Madrid, you mean?
Yeah.
I think there's a much better chance of Rafa Benitez ending up at Atletico Madrid than there is at Real Madrid. I've said all season that the problem for Real Madrid in terms of the manager is what Schuster decides to do, because Schuster hasn't much enjoyed the pressure, although he's eased into it in the last few weeks, partly because the club actually gave him a bit of a ticking off behind the scenes. He said, look, you can't go into every press conference and try and start a fight. So he said he promised to calm down, and he does look a little more calm, but he hasn't enjoyed the pressure this year. He doesn't feel like Real Madrid have quite given him the players that he wants, but I think he knows that as he's going to win the league, that his position will be reasonably strong, despite the fact that, truth be told, their football hasn't really been that much better than Capello, certainly not in terms of the consistency of performance. And there is a possibility of Real Madrid changing manager in the summer, but Rafa Benitez, despite the respect there is for what he's done at Liverpool, and despite the fact that Spanish, by the way, have gone absolutely bonkers over the Liverpool-Arsenal game during this week, there's still a feeling that Benitez is not the kind of manager that Real Madrid would want.
Have Atleti got the money to back Benitez with his usual shopping list?
Well, every year, Atleti spend millions and millions of pounds. They spend more than any club in Spain except Barca and Madrid. And in fact, over the last three or four years, in a lot of the summers, they've spent more than Barcelona have. Where they get the money from is another question entirely. And
where do they get the money from?
For the sake of not libelling us, I think I'd rather not say.
Right.
Let's just say that Enrique Cerezo, the current president, is one of the guys who was involved in one of the cases against Jesus Hill when the club used money from Marbella Town Council to support the club and also there were some dodgy dealings in the way that the club was floated at the time. And let's just say that the owner of the club is still the son of Jesus Hill, and of course Jesus Hill was as straight as they come.
Indeed he was, Sid, indeed he was. Ronaldinho has been given now permission to chat to as many Milanese clubs as he wishes by Barcelona, yes?
Ronaldinho is chatting to as many Milanese clubs as he wants. I suppose he'll chat to a few others, because of course what Barcelona want now is for him to strike deals with as many as possible, because they want to try and provoke a kind of auction. Because Barcelona now have resigned themselves to the fact that he's going. They won't be that unhappy with the fact that he has, as his brother has pointed out, struck a deal with Milan in terms of the personal terms. But now comes the negotiations between Milan and Barcelona. Barcelona want to get at least €30 million for him, which is about £23 million. Milan think they want to pay about €20 million right now. And given that Barcelona have completely devalued the product by publicly pointing out that they're not that enamoured with Ronaldinho anymore, it's going to be difficult for them. That's why they want other clubs involved, because they want to try and force the price up.
Sid, I guess I know the answer to this, but has there been much in the Spanish press about Swansea's promotion? Because they're managed by Martinez, and they've stormed to League One promotion. Any reference in Spain?
What do you think the answer is? Do you suspect it's no?
I'd imagine it's on the front page of El Mundo, Swansea's heroic.
strange enough, it has been mentioned. It hasn't been mentioned specifically in terms of Swansea's promotion, but it has been mentioned, if you like, as kind of one of the throwaway lines in a long series of articles about the English League over the last few weeks. And certainly when the Spanish were left without teams in the Champions League, except Barcelona, who obviously got there because they played two pretty poor teams en route, when they left without teams except Getafe in the UEFA Cup, there was a real feeling, right, England's overtaking us. But one of the things that they did to, if you like, kind of say, well, we're playing a part too, is they talked about Benitez, they talked about Juan de Ramos, and Roberto Martinez was mentioned, but only as a way of saying, look at what our boys are doing over there.
What was he doing at Swansea? Is this some kind of very, very, very delayed exchange deal with John Toshack or something?
That would be extraordinarily delayed. I must confess, I don't know the actual process by which Roberto Martinez turned up at Swansea, but of course his work with Sky for a number of years was also went hand in hand with the fact that he was getting himself qualifications as a coach. I don't know if any of you have ever spoken to him, but he's very, very bright. He's very alert. I think in the long term, he might be a very good coach. And certainly he's one of a number of Spaniards who's gone to England and really embraced English footballing culture and really enjoyed it. And I think he might actually go quite a long way.
As far as I know, he was a lower league sort of journeyman player and just he's sort of completely anglicised now and very popular in the locale as well, so...
Oh, nice.
He is anglicised up to a point, but there's also a thing, and I think this is significant with particularly with Benitez and Juan de Ramos, and also this summer I think we may well see another Spanish coach or two try and go to England. Whether or not they'll get clubs is another issue. Certainly, well, Marcelino at Racing at the moment would be interested in going to England. Unai Emery, currently at Almeria, would be interested in going to England. Quique Sanchez Flores has said before that he'd be interested in going to
England. Is it the money, Sid? What is it, allures them to England?
It is the money, it's but it's not just the money. let's not fall into the romantic trap. The bottom line is that in England you get a lot of cash.
Indeed.
But for coaches in Spain, there are a couple of other factors, and these are really important ones. The first one is that Spanish coaches believe that in England you're allowed to work in a way that you're not in Spain, and actually they're absolutely right, that you know you're given some say in the transfers, you're allowed to not succeed for a while if they see that there's some progress. And for example, a comment that was made in one of the Spanish papers recently, look at Arsene Wenger. We're all saying he's a great coach. We're all saying he's done great things at Arsenal. But when was the last time he won anything? A Spanish coach who goes through that run loses his job. And there's a real feeling amongst Spanish coaches that England's a great place to work because you have the money, you have the power, you have the players, you have the backing of the club. And there's another thing. And this is the thing that privately they think, well, they don't want this to be public, but here we go. Spanish coaches think that English coaches are rubbish.
And listen, there's lots of other questions for you here. I wonder how many we can get through. Haddam Bauer wants to know, is there any chance that Sergio Aguero is going to be moving this summer? Where would he go to? How much would he cost? Also, is it true Dos Santos to Arsenal for £14 million? It all sounds absurd to me, says Haddam Bauer.
Well, right. Well, let's start with Sergio Aguero. Yeah. Atletico Madrid... absolutely determined that he won't go.
Right.
He has been, I think, the best player in Spain this season, although there's one or two others who would challenge him. He's certainly good enough to go to any club in the world now.
Okay, but he's not, they don't want him to. Dos Santos?
They don't want him to go, and also he's very young, and I don't think he wants to go yet.
Right. Dos Santos to Arsenal, also very young?
Also very young, but Dos Santos, and he hasn't really taken the step up this season that people expected. In the summer, there was a big talk about him going to be the next big thing. I think he suits Barca's style in a way that some of the others don't. They play three up front, yet they're trying to fit Crowbar in three centre-forwards and it doesn't work. I mean, how many clubs would play with Eto'o and Henry on the wings? But Barca do it because they're so anchored to this 4-3-3. Giovanni Dos Santos actually fits that formation, but he hasn't played well. There's also a slight feeling within the club that perhaps he's getting ahead of himself, that perhaps he fancies himself a bit early. And Dos Santos does have a British-based agent talking to clubs at the moment.
Huh. Interesting. Why is it the Nou Camp and why is it sometimes Camp Nou?
Because it depends on basically how anglicised it is and whether you're going for the Catalan or Castilian version. The Nou Camp just means new ground.
Yes.
So in Castilian Spanish, it would actually be Campo Nuevo. In Catalonia, it'd been Camp Nou rather than Camp Nou. But again, as I say, it depends. There's three different languages all getting kind of mixed up there, which is why it's sometimes a little
bit... But camp should always come first.
The camp should come first in Spanish and Catalan, yeah.
Oh, OK, good. Sid says, Frappuccino, you have to write about Getafe. What happened to them is just so cruel. Horrible, unjust, heartbreaking, unbelievable. Playing for 10 men for almost the whole match, scoring a goal in the first half, then scoring not one but two more in extra time, and then out they go to Bayern Munich. How about that Getafe game, Sid?
They were desperately, desperately unlucky. It's interesting, actually, that what's happened with Getafe. I must confess, and this is going to sound horribly mealy-mouthed and miserable, I must confess that I'm actually getting a bit bored of Getafe now for one simple reason, and that is Getafe played brilliantly this year. I really like what they've done on a small budget. I have written about them before, by the way. I should throw that in now. I'd like to say before everyone else jumped on the bandwagon. And that is exactly why I'm finding them a little bit boring, because I think there's something deeply sort of irritating and patronising about the Madrid press donning Getafe scarves, and they literally have done it. Some of the pro-Madrid columnists wearing Getafe scarves and pulling ridiculous faces. Oh, we're all Getafe fans now. Even in Catalonia, they're doing it. Oh, we're all Getafe fans now. Well, actually, you're a bunch of liars. You're not. But what they've achieved is phenomenal, and I think most of Spain, well, let's face it, their game against Bayern Munich was the most watched game on Spanish TV this year. More than Barca, Madrid, and
how
so
many
on.
People?
Just over 11 million at the key moment of extra time. The highest peak was I think 11.5 million.
For the UEFA Cup, amazing.
As a goal,
yeah,
now,
UEFA Cup.
Sorry, go on. No, that's a goal. And I was texting Raphael Honigstein the last two goals that made it 3-3, and he's texted back, I think, joking, I hope, it's 1999 in reverse for Bayern Munich. I don't think the prize is quite as big, though, is it, as it was in there.
Well, that's it. But you see, the thing is, I mean, obviously in 1999, it's forgotten that Bayern Munich were, as you say, they lost it in the last minutes to Manchester United. But the feeling in Spain is that when Bayern did this to Getafe midweek, it was typical Bayern. Oh, those jammy sods, they always do this last minute. I think one thing that certainly has turned some of Spain against Bayern Munich was the reaction of Luca Toni when he scored, who did the finger to his lips thing, which always goes down pretty badly. And also, of course, let's not forget in all of this, there is another undercurrent, which is that Real Madrid, which dominates most of the press, and as I say, the Madrid press, the donning Getafe scarves, they hate Bayern Munich with a passion, because Bayern Munich nearly always knock out Real Madrid as well. So it helped, the two ingredients came together. And most of Spain will now be cheering for Getafe on Wednesday night in the Spanish Copa del Rey final when they play Valencia. The other thing that people have got on Getafe's side for...
Is it one or two legs, Sid?
It's just one leg. It's the final in Madrid at the Vicente Calderon. The other thing that's got a few backs...
So kind of Heather Mills are there, is it?
Zero.
I actually thought of that, but I'm not going to say it because it's too tasteless. Thanks, Jimbo.
Very, very, very tasteless. Yes, it's just one leg, and it will be a bitter battle, as indeed was. Anyway, enough. Yes, it's one-legged at the Vicente Calderon. Getafe were given a day less to rest this weekend, and they were furious about that. So that's another reason why everyone's on Getafe's side.
Sid, wait, listen, you've fulfilled your duties and more besides, I would say. Let's let you go to soak up some, I don't know, tomate with your pan or whatever it is you're about to do.
Something like that.
Have a siesta.
If only I could have a siesta, that would be great.
All right, you've probably got an excellent and exciting column to prepare for lucky Guardian online readers all over the planet. So we'll let you go on with that. Many thanks for joining us. Speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Thanks, Sid. And well, after that, it's probably only fair to get a bit of a right to reply from aforementioned texter Raphael Honigstein, who now joins us on the line. Raphael.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us today. So what was the reaction in Germany to Bayern's triumph in the UEFA Cup?
They couldn't believe just how lucky Bayern were. There's a word in Germany which is called the Bayern Dusel, which sort of translates as the Bayern fortune in the lucky sense of the word. And it's something that various numbers of rival clubs over the years have bemoaned, and they say, oh, Bayern always get lucky. They, of course, in Europe very often don't, as Man United fans I'm sure will remember. So this was a sort of Barcelona in reverse. They were dead probably three times during that game. Even though they had one man extra, they were quite terrible. The football was bad. But in the end, somehow, through the magic of Luca Toni, they scraped through.
Oh, indeed so. And are they quite optimistic, Bond, about their prospects in the UEFA Cup, which suddenly everybody's caring about now?
Yeah, they are. I mean, Oliver Kahn, of course, saw it as a sign from heaven, you know, that the way that they still progressed, and they're all talking about Manchester. I think Zenit St. Petersburg was almost seen as a sort of a...
formality?
Just a nuisance, yeah, that just needs to be dealt with very quickly. And that might be a problem, but...
But they've already knocked out a German side, haven't they?
They ran riot, 4-1 away, didn't they?
Yeah, they really killed Leverkusen in the Bayer Arena. But I think you already saw on Sunday when they played Dortmund, you know, in the league, and battered them 5-0. They were 4-0 up within, I think, 25 minutes. Yeah. Just how much that win in Spain, or that 3-3 in Spain, has sort of given them an extra lift, and all of a sudden, this team look quite formidable again.
Brilliant. OK, well, the final in City of Manchester Stadium on the 14th of May. By the sound of it, then, the Bundesliga title very much wrapped up.
Yeah, it looks like it. At the moment, they're 10 points clear. There's midweek football this week, but it's hard really to see them losing it. They're not really playing any good sides anymore, apart from Stuttgart. So I don't think even they themselves can mess this up. This is a formality.
Who would they prefer to meet in the final, Fiorentina or Rangers?
I think Fiorentina, because of Luca Toni, who, of course, would love to go up against his old club. And Uli Hoeneß has also said, oh, yeah, Fiorentina, that would be a great game. And I think also, you know, of course, they don't necessarily want to play in a stadium full of Scottish fans in Manchester. So I think Fiorentina would be the more preferred option.
But surely Rangers would be there for the taking, while Fiorentina are quite a decent side.
I can't disagree, by the way. I watched the Rangers game last weekend against Sporting Lisbon, and that's how to play an away game in Europe. A really sharp break for second goal, great pass by Steve Davis, great finish by Darshville. I know Raphael's going to tell us how lucky they were in the previous round in Germany, and I know they were. But they're proving a far more capable team than people think they are, and more resilient to a lot of clean sheets for Rangers.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was a surprising result, and perhaps the view in Germany was that certainly Rangers away from home are not perhaps that great good side. Even Stuttgart, of course, who were dire in the Champions League, managed to only win in the competition against them. So I don't know if it's really a big deal for Bayern as far as, you know, who they're going to play are concerned. I think they're going to this game and believe we are favourites, we're winning because we're Bayern, as they usually do.
Nice one. Fiorentina also just scraped through against Everton, but really turned it on in the quarterfinals against PSV with a 2-0 win away to PSV Eindhoven. Adrian Mutu, I think, was the big difference. He didn't feature in the Everton game, and he certainly did in that one. And they're through to that clash with Rangers.
Rafa, I noticed Schalke got thumped at Werder at the weekend and have lost the manager now.
Yep, they lost 5-1 at Bremen and lost to Mikko Slomka the day after the board decided to pull the plug. It was always sort of the open secret that he was going to be made to go in the summer anyway. But the manner of the defeat and, of course, the disappointing defeat in Barcelona sort of gave him an excuse to bring forward the execution, and now they've brought in two former players to take over as caretaker managers. And it's going to be very interesting. They're called Mike Buskins and Yuri Mulder, who will probably only familiar to diehard Schalke fans.
Not even Kevin knows them, which is
I'm ashamed. They're part of the team who won the 1997 UEFA Cup.
Raphael, fantastic. Anything else we should know?
No, that's it for today, I'm afraid.
So that's fine, because we've got to press on, because Sean wants to talk about video replays and he's got to go in a second or two.
Okay,
so,
good luck.
Raphael, thank you very much for that. What's still to come in Football Weekly? We're going to be looking through your posts and having a look at the latest from Italy and no doubt more besides. So stick around.
This is Guardian Football Weekly.
Now, posts, which kind of turned out to be Sean versus all comers last weekend, with your specialist subject being video bloody replays. Sean.
It was an interesting discussion. It was. But I just thought it was fascinating this weekend. I haven't had this long discussion. You know, you looked at, you know, QPR against Hull. There was a ball that went, it was a goal that given that shouldn't have been a goal. There was all sorts of decisions at the Liverpool game. There was a couple of penalties that should have been given. And I don't understand why people are so opposed to video evidence.
I don't understand why you're so enthusiastic about it. I can understand. So if you can get a machine that, no, it's opening a Pandora's box of nightmares and delays of people introducing advertising break. Are you not scared by what the fat end of this thin, of this wedge might represent? If you start bringing in little men with the machines.
Let me ask you a question. Say if last minute Chelsea play United.
Right.
John Terry headers a ball that goes over the line that isn't given. United win the league by 1 point.
See, I'm fine with machines that go beep if a ball crosses a line. Yeah. I don't want people going back to replays and stuff, because as was pointed out in the post this week, you can look at the replays of, for example, the Babel penalty in the Champions League semi-final against Arsenal. Quarter-final, sorry, I beg your pardon. Three different people are going to come up with three different conclusions.
But it's easy to resolve. What you do is you say, you know, the referee's birded on the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, you let him, unless, you know, if you can't, you know, in 60 seconds change that verdict by looking at video replay, then the referee's verdict stands.
I don't know. I just think it's opening up.
But surely it's about fairness. And I mean, according to Kevin Pillane, who's a wonderful statistics whiz,
right,
two out of every three games at the top flight ends, one goal separates the team.
Right.
So therefore, you know, two-thirds of the game, the result is often determined by a single incident.
You've lost me now. I respect your opinion, but I just think it's just going to end up messy.
Why should a league title be decided by a bad mistake by a referee?
Because it's human error. It's all part of the game.
But who cares? All the people that are in the clubs care. All the supporters care. All the money men care.
I tell you what, this season, Arsenal, right, are going to end up with nothing, right? But at least they've got all their bitterness towards the referee. What you're going to do is taking that away from them.
Football fans, you know as well as better than most that, judging by the email as we get every day, that football fans love whinging. They love thinking that the media is out to get their team.
Barry, remember that plan we got cooking?
If the Guardian reporters harboured all the grudges against various teams that they're supposed to harbour or that supporters believe in, that would be 92 just in the league alone. Then there's non-league teams who accuse us, you know, of an anti-Havant and Waterlooville bias because we never cover their games, you know. We don't have time to have that many grudges.
The trouble is, I think, the referee have an almost impossible job, and FIFA believes in this, you know, fallibility of the ref, like, you know, like the Pope, they don't make mistakes. But you only have to look at, you know, Liverpool Blackburn game yesterday. You know, you had the Samba Bodicek and Steven Gerrard. It wasn't sent off despite being the last man. Skirtle blocked off Jason Roberts, could have been sent off. Roberts had a goal that was not given, it was offside.
Did the Samba Bodicek not, was that not evening out Steven Gerrard's blatant dive previously?
But you have FIFA that make such absolutes about certain things, like when a yellow card should be given, and yet these huge big decisions, and I mean, Liverpool could have easily had a penalty as well, probably two in the second half. You're not, and that completely changes
matches.
Well,
I can see that there would be a simple way of doing this, which would be have a rolling observer keeping an eye on replays in the way that happened with the Zidane headbutt, and they would just flag up to the referee in the same way that a linesman does via the use of that little earpiece. If he hadn't started play again, he could say, listen, you made a mistake, that was whatever. I just feel that it's opening the door. The business of stopping the game and going to an appeal or having manager having two appeals per game, I just think it's opening up a really dangerous precedent. We're going to have adverts.
I don't disagree that this has to be done, you know, carefully, and they have to have trials.
But don't you like, football the way it is? Why do we always have, and FIFA are just as guilty of this, why do we have to keep changing things? Okay, we've got machines that can do different things than we did 10 years ago, but why do we have to change the sport?
All you're doing is for those very major decisions. If you didn't have that fourth official when Zidane headbutted someone...
Well, we didn't have it in 66.
Yeah, and look what happened.
Well, yeah, exactly.
What is that,
what I'm saying, that is the game. That is the game. Why do we have to continually reinvent the game?
Football now, though, isn't that sort of a happy little pastime anymore. It's a huge business with, you know, huge amounts riding on results. Therefore, and if you can bring in technology just to say, right, the ball's gone over the line, or, okay, did this guy pull a shirt in the penalty box? Why not?
I'm only going to okay if Kevin McCarry's in charge. Kevin, what do you think?
I think it's a huge project to decide what you're going to rule on. Right. I mean, there's endless events, so there had to be a protocol. I'm not that keen on stopping the game for a minute every time somebody makes a penalty claim. So how do you decide when you refer it to the video referee? Does the referee decide it himself? Therefore, you know, should he at Anfield have said, look, I'm not sure about this penalty? Because at Anfield, as James said, I don't understand how a video referee is going to resolve that. I think it's a penalty.
I don't think it is.
Every Arsenal fan alive thinks it isn't. And nothing has changed in the past week.
But when in doubt, you don't give it.
Yeah, I mean, but how long will that take to go over that free kick? You can do a PhD in that
decision. You look at the replay really quickly in about, you know, 30 seconds, and then say, right, it's got to be
offside decisions, penalty decisions, goals, did it or didn't cross the line.
You start with goals, see how that goes on, and
that's what I'm saying. Thin end of the wedge. Thin end of the wedge. Now, there you go. Any other posts? Sean, come back.
Sean's leaving in a huff. not because he has to go to an important meeting.
A very posh lunch we'll have, you know.
Another very posh lunch.
Have a super lunch.
Thank you all.
Let's hope.
And I really enjoyed the debate on the blogs, by the way, last Friday. So thank you for everyone that contributed for and against.
Nice.
I didn't enjoy it.
Right, okay. Some other posts that managed to squeeze their way in between Sean and his stat obsessed friend. Right, Steven Gerrard nominated for the Cristiano Ronaldo PFA Player of the Year award. Perhaps his old man paid yet another fixer to ensure he made the shortlist. That's not very fair, says Michael is away.
I think that joke, like your Heather Mills one, was stolen from the fire.
My Heather Mills
week.
Joke was not stolen from anywhere.
Yes, anyway.
I think any fool armed with the words one leg and Heather Mills could come up with a similar concept. Bill Nick's ghost. One story that seems to have dipped under the radar of most is Pompey's declaration of £23 million losses for their last season, mostly due to an escalating wage bill. What do you reckon about this, Kevin? Because is it an alarm bell ringing or inconsequential?
Well, it's quite extraordinary because Harry Redknapp's always telling you about how he hasn't spent very much. Blimey, the wages you have to pay Sol Campbell to divert him from going abroad and staying in England. I think Harry Redknapp spends more than he lets on. But then again, if the owner allows him to do it, then why shouldn't he?
Mm, right, but is it not... can they soak up that kind of a debt without any...
Well, they have an owner who can afford it.
Right,
I mean,
okay.
But clearly it's not a long-term proposition. You can't do that every year.
Right, OK. Other posts. Don Felipe, is it just me or do I detect a strange tension between Sean England and Jimbo? No idea what Don Felipe
so.
Is. He indulges in a rather unpleasant fantasy after that. But anyway, Ronaldez says, any chance of the winner of the podcast, Pick Your Score League, getting a trip into the Geo-Orbitary Station to join astronauts Barry, Kevin, Sean and Commander James? I only ask because I'm third at the moment. If he was first, you can bet he wouldn't be asking. He'd be making other plans. I don't know. Sean, we should have asked him before he dashed out the door.
I really...
You'd have to do astronaut training first, though, wouldn't you? That takes, what, 12 weeks?
I suspect... Who wrote that post?
Ronaldez.
I suspect Ronaldez thinks we have a lot more fun in here than we actually do. Yeah.
Barry, what are you saying?
he's more than welcome to come and sit in for me any week he likes.
If the winner gives us a secret so we stop making such a mess of our predictions, well, I'm all in favour, yeah.
That's a very good point. And Skaster in Bangalore, India, says, his Dark Materials business, it's a shame Philip Pullman sold out and allowed a Hollywood studio to ruin his book when he should really have waited for Miyazaki to extend an offer to turn that amazing story into a sublime animation film a la Howl's Moving Castle. Well, a very good shout. Have you seen that, Kevin?
No, I haven't. No.
You would like it. Howl's Moving Castle, or the one before that, Spirited Away, and all the other stuff that wasn't
would
mainstream.
Would I not like it?
You would like it, Barry. When you were away last week, Kevin and I got talking.
Yeah.
Listeners, you might find a lunch appointment now, Barry, because it's time for a quick roundup on Italy. And there were some huge matches. There really were some huge matches. I can't.
I should actually go and get that present somebody sent, a reader or a listener.
Let's not go into that. Somebody sent a tacky magazine in and then wrote it was from Dave whatnot.
David Gold, yeah.
But
it might have been the David Gold.
I think it wasn't.
But it was for me to read during your Italian roundup.
Oh, was it? Oh,
but
okay.
The pages were already stuck together.
No, thanks, so Barry. No. Right, OK. So now, the thing was, there were three huge games. Inter, as you recall, Barry, were 4 points clear of Roma coming into the weekend, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, Roma were away to Udinese, tough side. Inter were at home to Fiorentina, who were just coming off this big result in the UEFA Cup, right? Now, Fiorentina, equally, were 4 points ahead of Milan, trying to hang on to their position in the top four and get into the Champions League. Last two seasons, Barry, Fiorentina have amassed enough points to get into the Champions League for the first time since they were sent down to the fourth division in 2001. And every time it gets taken away from them, this time, are they going to be able to stay in? Would you like to know how the game went?
I know how the game
went. Oh, curses. It was very exciting.
They lost 2-0.
They did. Inter came up with their best performance of the season. And Mario Balotelli, the 17-year-old, did you see?
No.
He looks really good. He does look really good. 2 goals in 2 games for him. Cambiasso scored first. Frey in goal for Fiorentina was brilliant. And I'd worry about him if I were you Rangers fan, because he's in absolutely outstanding form. Although he is carrying a leg injury, so we'll have to see how that develops. However, he kept the scoreline down, but Inter were very much in control. Fiorentina played some fancy football, but never really threatened. And Mario Balotelli, the 17-year-old of Garni's origin, beautiful second goal, very cool, just steps past the keeper and passes it into the net. And Fiorentina, I think, were maybe a little bit knackered after their exploits in the UEFA Cup, but there you go. However, it doesn't really impact on their position in the top four, because Milan lost in an absolute humdinger Saturday night away to Juventus. Juve Milan, brilliant game, 3-2. And a big, big step this towards Del Piero getting back into the Italy squad, I reckon, because he was exceptional. He was the player of the game. He looked like Kaká in Kaká when he's good. He was skipping past people. He was setting up things. He scored. Pippo Inzaghi had two of the easiest tap-ins you'll ever see. But Juve eventually won it with Salihamidzic with his second goal.
It does make me wonder whether Ronaldinho fancies UEFA Cup, because at the moment that's what Milan are bound for.
Well, they are fifth. Now, all the other teams in the running, Sampdoria, they lost. Udinese lost to Roma. Roma went a goal down at Udinese. Antonio Di Natale nodding in at the far post. And then Roma's keeper, Doni and Panucci, almost coming to blows. Panucci is a bit of an old hand at this kind of thing, but Doni said, that's your ball, and you missed one at Old Trafford as well. And then Panucci has a go at him, and then Doni basically asks him out. He says, ti spacco, I'm going to break you apart after the game. Fantastic, this is all in the middle of the game. Anyway, and then Roma go down the other end, they score three, and Totti tells the referee to get stuffed. But Roma stay 4 points behind at the top. There are 5 games to go. Milan still 4 points behind Fiorentina in the race for fourth place. They lost, as I say, Sampdoria lost, Udinese lost, and there you go. Milan, I mean, well, there's an interesting thing. They kind of announced that they're 180% sure of getting Ronaldinho and Shevchenko for next season.
That's bad news, isn't it? Well, half of it, maybe.
I have to say that, it, put like that, if they're going to bring in Shevchenko and proper people, like Ronaldinho, and Boniello, the 24-year-old, I think he's 25 now, who's the top scorer in Serie A and is doing brilliantly at Genoa, who's theirs, and they've loaned him out to Genoa. If Shevchenko comes in and is going to do a job in the same way that, say, Inzaghi does, like he's a bit older knacker, but you bring him on and he'll put it away for you, then maybe. I think what the fans were really upset about is the idea that they'll do Shevchenko as opposed to actually buying somebody proper.
To offset my previous remarks, I must admit, Shevchenko had a good spell this season around the turn of the year. Then he got a knee injury or something. They were on and on and on. But maybe he'd be rejuvenated if he felt happy at being back in Milan.
It would be interesting. It all depends on which Shevchenko and which Ronaldinho Milan get. Yeah. Like if they get fat, indifferent Ronaldinho and Chelsea Shevchenko.
And if they even get him, because Inter are now announcing that it really depends on them and whether they feel that they might need Ronaldinho, which is hardly the most appetising way to woo a player, I would have thought. But they seem to think they might have a chance. And Roberto De Assis, the brother of Ronaldinho, his agent, saying that despite Galliani's remarks, nothing's been sorted out. Barcelona have given Milan the OK to talk to the player. There has been some kind of preliminary agreement, but nothing has been finalised yet. So there you go. Well, there you go. That was a fairly pacey Italian roundup. And you're only on page 33 there, Barry.
Yeah, it's a myth that I don't like your Italian roundup. I'm as interested in your Italian roundup as anyone else, which admittedly is not very interested. But, you know, I keep an eye on the Italian football. I don't think it's boring or anything.
Oh, good. That's nice then. Juventus, I should just mention, today are claiming to be tying up a deal for Amaury. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. Brazilian forward, very, very exciting player, fast, can play on the break, good on set pieces. For and still in with the shout of picking up Italian citizenship, indeed, because he was humming and hurrying whether to accept an Italy call-up were one to come. But anyway, they seem to think they're going to be bringing him in, which is probably just as well, because they are getting a little bit creaky, one or two of them, at Juventus. But there you go. Good performance from Juve against Milan on Saturday. And that really is, I think, it. Time for us to go the way of all Sean and depart the pod. Many thanks to producer Patrick and Kevin McCarra, Sean Ingle, Barry Glendenning, Raphael and Sid Lowe, and you, the listener, as well. We'll be back on Thursday, and I look forward to speaking to you then. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.